There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring doing stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a podcast!
Yeah, we're gonna be a podcast!
Starring everybody!
And me!
There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that ends for us real happily.
Hey, a podcast!
We can hear it all develop!
Starring everybody!
And me! We'll take the world and set it on its ear.
Come on, join in.
We're gonna start right here.
Hey everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. Very special guest today. Somebody who I grew up with, who I have done co-creations with. His name is Ross Demma. You can find him at rossdemmaart.com. He's my cousin, but I consider him to be a brother. Ross, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. This is great.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Getting there.
Right.
So the reason that I have had Ross on the show today is because, like I said, he and I grew up together, and I believe we share a lifelong deep admiration for the work and art and craft of puppetry. And specifically, Jim Henson.
Right? I think that's putting it mildly, but yeah.
Yeah, it is putting it mildly.
We can't overstate this.
Yeah, you really can't. Like, it's funny. Like, somebody I was dating once came over and I showed them Little Shop of Horrors, and they were like, "When did you see this?" And I was like, "I think I was like 6." And they're like, "Yeah." No, well, that explains a lot.
Pretty much, like, your entire mindset just, like, opened up in front of them.
Yeah, they're just nope, like, oh.
I get it.
Oh, boy.
I get all of it.
Anyway, see ya. Yeah. Anyway. Well, anyway, you know, screeching tire noise out the door. Anyway. You were actually in a high school production of that, right?
I was. I was Mr. Mushnick.
Yeah.
And I did my very best Vincent Gardenia.
Yeah.
I would love to go back and do it again. But, you know.
But at the same time, like, this Muppet stuff and you know, being obsessed with, like, the work of, like, Frank Oz and Jim Henson,
mm-hmm.
It's informed a lot of my life's work. Like, I've always been in love with it. Which is why we are doing today's show, which is called Puppet Show. We're only talking about puppets today. And I can be the self-indulgent because I have a steady job. Anyway, so I don't know what to care about. How many people listen to this? Anyway,
it was your reading on Puppet Show that I really enjoyed.
But I mean, actually, like, interestingly enough, so Ross, like, you and I have a shared background in amateur show business.
Yeah.
We've made some stuff. It's out there somewhere. Good luck finding it, but it's out there somewhere.
There's a handful of people that, you know, aside from us.
Yeah.
That have this in their collection. There's like a hope chest or some sort of dusty box in an attic somewhere that has things that we did.
Yeah, somewhere.
Somewhere.
I actually know exactly where all that shit is, and it's
I know where mine is.
Well, my shit is in a closet somewhere.
It's my stuff is very, it's safe, it's secure.
Yeah.
I can get to it whenever I want.
But at the same time, like, just to point this out, we grew up with this stuff, and our parents instilled in us, I think, a sense of reverence for cinema. Like, oh, yeah. Just a real love of it. And with that in mind, Ross, have you seen any good movies lately?
Well, I finally got around to seeing The Lighthouse. That was...
The Lighthouse.
Lighthouse, my God.
Featuring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
It was fantastic. Like, it was the amazing...
It's nutty. It's nutty.
Amazing, nutty, weird shit.
But the thing is, you're going to fucking remember that movie next year. Like, absolutely. You'll be like, yeah, remember that movie where there's two guys in the lighthouse?
That's it.
It's fucking insane. And it's so good. That movie is so good. It is hard to overstate. Like, listen, if you like weird shit, and only if you that's specific. Only if you like really weird shit. Because, like, otherwise you're going to be like, what is this?
I'm still, honestly, like, I've been married for 12 years, and for the most part, my wife will watch just about anything. I am still debating whether or not I want to show her The Lighthouse, because there are some things where I'm like, I don't know if I want to, she'll sit through that.
I don't. You're fond of me lobster, ain't you?
Hark!
It's so fun to, like, just show that, like, put... Well, okay, it's fun to subject people to it. That's... Right. It's like, do you know what you're in for? Yeah, fine. I'm fine with anything. Are you really?
All right, here you go.
Are you actually fine with anything? Here you go. That movie is magnificent. I think it's gorgeous and beautiful and like just one of the best things. It was my number two movie for last year.
It was. I'm so glad that I finally got to get around to it. I'm sadly behind on so many movies. trying to remember the last one I saw in the theater. I'm not sure. It's at least been a few months, but. Most of the stuff I'm streaming on whatever, Hulu, Netflix, Disney Plus, CBS.
Sure.
I'm just trying to get through all the stuff.
There's so much stuff.
It is a lot of stuff. And I'm still, like, I understand that there's still a lot of stuff that I'm going to miss. Because it's a constant barrage of content being produced everywhere. And that's also along with the actual stuff that I do, like my day job and art. And I also... like keep relatively current on a number of podcasts and man, no wonder I'm tired all the time.
Yeah. It's just too much shit.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's too much shit. Well, all right. I suppose it is puppet time. So like I said, you and I have a very long history of being completely obsessed with the art and craft of puppetry.
Yes.
And I think that was born from watching all this stuff in the 80s as children.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it's born from recognizing the amount of work it takes to create such things.
I also think that there was a level that was set very young where from watching like Henson and like the technological Marvel stuff. So I didn't really watch like H.R. Puffin stuff, like that kind of stuff.
Well, that was before our time.
Right. I mean, but there were always reruns. Okay. But let's say Eureka's Castle was all right.
Sure.
It was no Muppet Show, but it scratched that itch a little bit. But at the same time, I would watch other things like Henson and Company. Like that was the standard that I held everything to. If it seemed below that, I was like, I guess I don't really need to. I'm not really into this.
I thought Eureka's Castle was a Henson production. Maybe it wasn't.
No, they were very close, though.
Sure. So they got people from the Henson Company to work on.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Eureka's Castle. Yeah. No, it's been a lifelong kind of obsession. And, you know, I've always felt that like puppetry is always very close to animation. In the way that it's produced. Well, I suppose that's not particularly accurate, but it's a similar art form in that there are no people on screen.
Right.
There's no people. It's just puppets or cartoons. One of the two.
Yeah.
And something about this is magic. There's something about this particular formula that feels like it's magic. And it has always felt that way to me. If you go back and look at some of the stuff from the 80s and the 90s and you realize, like, oh, they did this without computers. They did this with no computer assistance.
There was most likely a dude crouched down very uncomfortably in a hot outfit
for 12 hours.
For 12 hours, making sure that we could see this, that this could get made, and there's almost no evidence of that person being there on the screen. Like, all that's left is
there is no evidence. Form. There is no evidence. Like,
right.
You go back and watch, like, the old Muppet shows. You can watch Little Shop of Horrors. Like I said, that was like a marvel at the time.
Yeah, it was.
It was like, that was like, what, 86?
Yeah.
And so Rick Moranis had to, like, slow down the way he was pronouncing. You had to get that timing exactly right.
Yes. I didn't know what a marvel it was at the time. Like, I knew it was a marvel. Like, it was fantastic, but I didn't know how much until years, like a decade or so later, when I was watching behind the scenes stuff and finding out, you know, not only did Rick Moranis had to slow down his speech, but he had to slow down his singing.
Yeah.
In order to be on the same screen as the plant, because they couldn't work the cables fast enough.
Yeah. He had to be like, the guy sure looks like plant food to me.
Right. and then they'd play that back at regular speed.
Yeah. Regular speed. And then that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of work that goes into that, like, it just astonishes me now, even to this day. Just amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah, I guess you could do it all with computers, but oh, it was so incredible back then.
Right, because if you get anybody that you're like, hey, you'd point to something that they did 30, 40 years ago, you're like, hey, we should recreate this. They're like, oh, yeah, that's super easy. We could just, like, get a wireframe around it and mocap people and done.
Yeah. There's a remake of that coming.
All right.
There's a remake of that one coming. So, yeah. I really did grow up mostly with Henson stuff. Like, mm-hmm. Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, mostly Labyrinth, you know, kind of the Dark Crystal.
Right.
And the Muppet Show, and then, you know, Muppet Babies and all that other bullshit. But, like, it really made an impact on me. And to this day, when I see it, it only reinforces the idea that, like, wow, these guys really fucking put their hearts out. Like, they really did. It's a little challenging to see now, where you're like, well, a lot of these guys are dead. Well, they are. And
right.
And seeing it now, it's like, holy shit, you had to do this?
Also, it does not help my imposter syndrome whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna pack it in. Like,
yeah,
Why do I look what they did? Why do I even want to do anything?
Yeah, right.
Like, they did it. It's there. We're done.
Exactly. So recently, the corporation known as Netflix released 10 hours of The Dark Crystal, which I kind of couldn't believe at the time. I was like, you're going to make how much of this, which no one seems to like?
I was so worried.
Yeah. How did...
Because...
So
go ahead.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, there were rumors bandied about for years. I would say at least 10 years that, like, oh, they're going to do a Dark Crystal sequel. And then, you know, always on the heels of that, oh, they're going to do a Labyrinth sequel. This was before the passing of Bowie. And, both of those, I immediately, like, don't do that. Do something else.
Yeah.
Please don't touch that.
You're not going to make anything good.
Right. And then I heard the awful words of animated in conjunction with either of these. I think specifically with Dark Crystal. I'm like, don't stop. Don't animate it. That's please don't.
Yeah.
So when this finally came out, obviously seeing the trailers and the stills and the lead up to this, knowing that they were going to do, we're like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and it's going to be practical. We're going to do puppets. I'm like, holy crap. Okay. You've got me. Let's see what happens.
And you know, you finished the show out. What was your take?
The take was, there's a lot that I don't know about the Dark Crystal. Like, there was worlds and lore and creatures that I had no idea. Like, we only scratched the surface with the movie, apparently. There was so much more left.
See, now, I'm not so sure about that. Because,
okay,
in as much as I enjoyed the show. So, this show is about, basically, Gelfling society before the Skeksis come in and fucking wreck everything.
It's the prequel, essentially. Yeah. It's the lead up.
This is the Dark Crystal episode one, The Phantom Menace.
Right.
That's what this is. Which is, it's fine. You know, admittedly, I thought the puppetry work was pretty great. And I did really enjoy the backgrounds and everything and how they managed to pull it off. Only problem is the show is like almost 100% lore. Like, there are things that I appreciated about the way they did their storytelling, but it's so much meaningless lore that I don't that I don't care about. I can't care about the stupid lore stuff that, like, okay, yeah, all right, like,
this is Dark Crystal extended universe to you.
Yeah, and it's just like, look, did we really need another 10 hours of this? Like, you could have done this in six. You could have done this in 6 hours, and it wouldn't have taken up so much of my time. But, which is weird for me to say, because, like, I've been an advocate for the Dark Crystal for a really long time, like, listen, you gotta watch this fucking movie. It's weird and bold.
Said Dad, you're not gonna make me watch Little Shop of Horrors again, are you? No. It's watch this one.
Yeah. And then they're like, "What is this?" And you're like, "I don't fucking know, but let's watch." No, but but, like, yeah, like, it's very much like, okay, I guess so. I didn't love it as much as I thought I would, because it was so Dungeons and Dragons-y.
It was very D&D. This is, I agree.
Like, there's like entire episodes where it's just like, yep, that's where those creatures came from. But I didn't really care. It was just like, yo, I get your point. This is an oppressed people being taken advantage of by a ruling class. I get what you're saying. So let's just get to the point already.
You're not so subtle messages received.
Yeah. Does it need to be 10 hours long? I can't tell.
There were some things I didn't need to know where the Gartham came from, like the spider crab creatures.
That's kind of where it ends, right? Like,
well, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of ends there. And I was like, okay, whatevs. Like, you do have something to say with this, right? Like, I'm not just looking for content. Like, I would like something that means something to me. Which, I don't want to be too harshly critical, because I would like more of it. Like, okay, fine. Make more. That's
right.
The movie, man, the original movie is a really original, really interesting sort of artifact of the 80s, which nobody likes that movie. Still, no one likes that movie.
Now I think you've told me this. I think I learned this from you, that the Dark Crystal exists, or it's the Muppets Take Manhattan exists because of Dark Crystal, correct?
Well, it's a slightly different story. The Dark Crystal exists because Jim Henson agreed to direct The Great Muppet Caper at the same time.
Yes, okay.
Which is fucking incredible.
Right.
When you think about it from the perspective of someone who actually had to make the damn thing.
And it also showed, like, the Dark Crystal is what Jim was really looking to do.
Yeah, and
they're like, okay. Yeah. You want to do this?
Him and Brian Froud, they really wanted to make that. They really did.
So yeah, they're like, the studio's like, okay, if you want to make this, give us another Muppet movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he's like, and the Great Muppet Caper did not suffer from it. That's what's amazing.
No, well, okay, listen. So it didn't. And in fact, I think it might actually be like one of the best comedies of the 1980s as a result of Jim Henson basically just looking straight into the camera and going like, eh.
Well, because that's a lot of what the Muppets are about.
Yeah.
Literally looking straight into the camera going, eh.
Yeah, and then you like this?
Right, on to something else. Yeah.
That is my favorite thing about the Muppets. It's just very direct. It's just very like, well.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I got some shit to do. Let me get this out of the way. But that's relatable, like, for like a lot of people. And I think the fact that he was so good at putting that on screen, like making sure you know, like, eh. that's the vibe.
Right.
I think that's part of why it's so successful. Like, I think that's why it works so well. But yeah, no, the Dark Crystal was definitely this giant passion project between Jim Henson and Brian Froud. And I think if I need to revisit it, I'll go back to the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I have that one in 4K. So I did
find myself wanting to, like, as I was watching Age of Resistance, I'm like, I really want to go back and watch the original movie now.
Yeah. It just kind of makes you want to watch the old one.
And I did, like, right after. Like, all right, 10th episode is done.
Where they tell you everything that's going to happen. Now, the ending the ending of Age of Resistance gets straight into, like, well, maybe there will be a sequel. Yeah, I get it. You're trying to kind of Game of Thrones it.
Right.
Yeah, all right. There's all these warring Gelfling factions, and some of them are sort of working with the Skeksis and stuff. Yeah, all right. Okay, but I know what, well, but I know what you're doing, and the thing is, y'all die.
We know where this ends.
Yeah, there was a movie made back in the, like, 35, 40 years ago where they tell us that you all die, and there's only two Gelflings left. There's only two of them left.
There is a Gelfling and mostly Podling genocide.
Right. And there's one boy and one girl, and that's fucking it. So I already know where this goes. You already told me. So I don't know.
Titanic was one of the highest grossing movies ever. The Star Wars prequel trilogy still made a ton of money. People like, yeah, we get it. You're going to turn into Darth Vader. But they still showed up and watched the movie. I was one of them.
Yeah, that's okay. But that is a franchise called Star Wars. So you
probably. But you're like, okay, I know where this is going, but I'm still going to watch the journey. I think is what they're counting on.
I guess. I don't know. Whatever. I don't think. If the show had been enough of a success, they would have already announced a second season, which they have not. So, yeah. We'll see.
Well, I guess.
We'll see. I hope they all get work again. But, like, frankly, if I were them, I would say, like, okay, what are we going to do? We need some money. Okay, well, let's do Labyrinth to Electric Boogaloo. featuring a different musician. Like, this time it's not David Bowie. This time it's somebody else.
Man, they're gonna essentially, like, LeBron James in Space Jam Labyrinth.
I would be totally cool with a Taylor Swift Labyrinth.
Oh my god! Oh,
totally, yes. Cool with that. And yes. Then but it's still a girl, and it's a little gay. I would be totally cool with that.
You know what? I'm sold. Where do I sign? Where's the
you're like, where's my opening night?
I will put in opening night
tickets. Like, you can go ahead and do it, but just make it weird.
We need to get Swift on the phone.
That would be fun. Anyway, so Ross, you don't have a long history with I would say you don't have a long history with anime.
No, it's spotty at best, and it dropped off about 99.
Oh my god. Which at this point is 20 years ago.
Which there's a lot of stuff that I've seen here and there since then, and a lot of it is the very accessible stuff that would show up on Cartoon Network and, you know, DBZ too, but that's not my focus. And, you know, I hear about great stuff. I watch the trends of the cosplayers.
So in other words, I don't watch anything.
Nah, no, not really. I would like to, but it's just like, you heard all the content that I consume regularly.
So for this episode, what I did was I said, hey, would you like to watch the show Thunderbolt Fantasy by Gennaro Bucci, Peely Puppet Show, that chiefly runs on a site called Crunchyroll. And it's something that I have frankly been in love with since it came out. I thought, given your enthusiasm for puppets, your similar enthusiasm for puppets, that you would also really approach this with like, oh shit, like I thought you might get it. And it turns out, I think you did.
I think I did as well. You told me about this initially, what, like 3 months ago, I think. You were like, oh yeah, there's this great show. You should check it out sometime. Like it was an in passing. And then what I found a clip online, I was like, all right, let's check out this clip and see what it's all about. And I 6 minutes I was in. I was like, all right, let's do this. And then when you asked me, like, hey, you want to come on the podcast and talk about it? Yes, I do.
So interestingly, my co-host Lindsay Leverage is not here. She has claimed to be sick. Now, I'm calling her out and saying, you're probably not sick. You probably just don't want to come on the show and talk about Thunderbolt. Because she's very meh on it. Which, to be frank, I cannot understand that attitude for even a second. Because this show fucking rules. It's so good. Oh my god.
From the jump.
It's so good. All right, so tell us a little bit about the first season of Thunderbolt Fantasy. How does that go?
The basic rundown is that there's guardians of a mythical sword, and the sword was broken up into different pieces. You have the blade, the crossguard, and the handle, the hilt.
Right.
And the blade is stuck somewhere. The blade is very sword in the stone somewhere. And you have these two characters that are essentially the keepers of the other two pieces. They're the guardians to make sure this mythical sword never gets put back together and used in an evil fashion. And one of them dies within like 5 minutes of the first episode.
Actually, I'm pretty sure his head gets cut off.
It does. My God.
There's a lot of decapitation in the
There's
show.
A lot of decapitation. There's a lot of super over the top attacks and kills that they're puppets. And
and they're disemboweling each other.
There are, you know, a head lops off and then like arterial blood sprays out of the stump.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. That's and quite possibly, usually when it comes to adult content and puppets, I have a very clear line where I'm like, don't do that.
Oh, don't. Yeah. No, like the Happy Time Murders was the crossing the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. I saw the trailer for that and I was like, nope. You know what? I'm good. I'm done. Yeah, I don't want to.
No. Yeah. No. Don't watch that movie.
But this, it was, I don't know what the difference is, whether it's the designs, because they look more like actual people than, you know, fuzzy Sesame Street puppets, that it worked. So the brother and sister are the guardians. The sister is horribly injured. She gets away. She meets up with a wandering hero. Well, he's not really a hero. He's just a wandering guy. And he's quite hilariously kind of, I don't want to say tricked, but he's kind of tricked into helping her.
I suppose.
His name is Shang, and he's wonderful. He's your
he's my boy.
He's your rogue scoundrel, easy on the scoundrel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Shang is very much like a but he's just it's like, heavy sigh, just, heavy sigh the character. Like he's
he just wants to do his thing and move on.
Trying to do the right thing.
Like can I just look? He's the character where he comes into a bar, like the saloon, and they're like, "Hey," and he's like, "Ah, oh, I just want to have my drink."
Yeah, yeah. Or like, I just wanted to sit down for a second. Could you all stop for a moment? And they're like, "Hey, aren't you that guy who has a shut up?" it's like perfect exhaustion.
And then he does absolutely nothing until somebody physically pokes him, and he's like, now I've got to murder you all.
Yeah, well, now I have to do this.
Right. You brought this on yourselves.
Yeah, right. Like, well, this is your fault. It's not my fault. That's a good description. But it is basically the first season of the show is at least it's basically written. I think the second season actually differentiates from this. But the first season is written basically like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, where they pick up a couple of party mates along the way,
right?
Including Demon Lady, the Demon Lady that whose motives are obviously questionable. You have not mentioned Lynn. Is the other main character of Thunderbolt Fantasy.
He's the one that essentially like semi-tricks Shang into helping, which I thought was brilliant and wonderful.
Yeah. Lynn's character is effectively like, well, I know what the right thing to do is. How can I trick people into doing the right thing? And how can I fuck with the bad guys using my charisma? Like he's like all like he dumped all of his points into charisma, basically.
Right.
Like, that's everything that he has in the first season. It's really good. Like, you know, and they have the big showdown in the evil like Skeletor Palace, and they ride on those big demon birds and everything. It's so good. It's so good.
Like, and there was a moment where they called those demon birds, and I know for a fact it has to be whoever was writing this had the whole Lord of the Rings thing in the back of their head, because they're riding the demon birds, and one of them goes, well, why didn't we just ride these demon birds all the way to the evil castle?
Yeah, no, they
and I'm like, oh my god, it's the eagle thing from Lord of the Rings. Oh man, why don't we just ride the eagles all the way?
Gena Urobuchi like does not. So the guy who wrote this, Urobuchi, he is famous for good writing. Now I don't know if you're familiar with the show Puella Magi Madoka Magica. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No,
it's a good show. He wrote that, which is an extremely famous and popular anime, and he's dedicating like most of his time to Thunderbolt, and at this point, which is basically like saying like that show was such a huge hit, it would be kind of like if Zack Snyder said like, you know what I'm gonna do now, I'm gonna make puppet shows instead. But not like Zack Snyder, not like his crappy writing. Like, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
right.
Giant director has a massive hit and then says, like, I'm gonna parlay this into, oh, I can just make puppets. I can just do a puppet show.
Do this all the time.
Yeah, I'd rather do this. Like, so much easier. So much easier. So, how does the first season wrap up?
Okay, so he did end up putting that, he channeled the power of one of the swords that he has collected, Shang does, and it banishes the main bad guy, which, can I just say, holy crap, that final monster creature god thing, it's a giant insectoid praying mantis with like a skull head.
Yep.
And it's the most like D&D final boss I've ever seen.
It's very extra.
Yeah.
And it's also rad as fuck.
It is so, so amazing. So yeah, he whips out one of these swords that he keeps in a like an enchanted scroll, essentially, and banishes the bad guy.
Right. And so, you know, the bad guy is banished. Everyone sort of parts their ways. Like, it's kind of like, well, see you next time. but I honestly really did think that season two had stronger, in as much as I love the first season of that show, and it's very fun. Like, it's really fun. I think it's very satisfying from a character writing standpoint. Like, it gives you everything you want. It's, yeah, it feels like a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, but, like, it does feel like, this is kind of what I want from something like this. You know, like, I can't imagine it being better than this.
Right.
You know, with all the terrible puppet violence and all of that stuff. But season two, I thought, totally brought the writing to another level.
That, like, all of that got ramped up.
Yeah, well, it got really ramped up, but, like, so, give me your thoughts on Fox Cop.
Oh, God. Fox Cop.
And season two is really different. Like, they have it's not really, it's not that different, but it's very much like, okay, no, seriously, you're fighting a fascist, selfish piece of shit who is totally corrupt.
He is a douche on all levels.
Yeah, oh, he sucks. And I spent that entire season just like, when is this guy going to get cut the fuck up? Because really want to watch him die.
And they almost, they pretty much completely call that out to the audience in the writing, where there's a couple of times where two different characters on two separate occasions are talking to him, or they do like a stage whisper thing. Like, how can this guy enjoy being a douchebag this much?
Yeah, no, Shang says that, like, what do you like being an asshole? Is that your problem? Like, he basically says that, which is what I love about Urobuchi's writing. It's just so direct. It's just like, yeah. What do you like being a shithead? Is that your problem?
What's your reasoning for being this horrible?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they'll have a conversation back and forth about that a little bit. And that's one of the reasons that I love Thunderbolt, is because the characters are frequently, and season two in particular, the characters are frequently just stand-ins for an ethos, like a personal belief system, and which is very relatable. And he'll break it down into pretty easy ways that you can sort of understand what he's trying to go for. And I really do believe that, like, it's like, oh, like, you've got it. Like, you've got this character. And it's easy to pick out who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. And even Shang, who is, like, very even-handed, his whole thing is, like, listen, I have feelings too, but you only show emotions when it's when you're as powerful as I am, when you can murder people with a stick. You only, which he does in the show,
right?
You only show emotion when you have to. And the rest of the time, the only thing you're supposed to do is protect the weak and protect people who can't protect themselves. And it's the only thing you're supposed to do.
Right. Essentially, if you focus your power on protecting the weak, then eventually the assholes will minimalize or peter out. Like, don't focus your energy on them. Focus your energy on, you know, protecting the good people.
Yeah,
and he's, the people that can't protect themselves type thing.
Yeah, it's funny because he is effectively the Kermit the Frog of Thunderbolt Fantasy.
he's just getting this group of ragtag people together.
No, well, no, but just this exhausted scrunch face and then goes to work. Like, okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't know how many times Shang face palmed. Like, that was a regular thing for that puppet to do.
Yeah.
Where I can tell it's now these puppets, it's their facial expressions don't change, their mouth barely moves due to design. Their hands can open and close around things, I assume by cable work.
Right.
And you can still tell when it looks like Shang is like pinching the bridge of his nose in exasperation, or Fox Cop. Like he's just got douchey mannerisms.
Yeah.
And it's still that Fox is Cop. What astounded me. I was like, his face didn't change, but I know exactly what he's doing. Yeah. Like,
until they until they close in on his teeth.
Oh man. Oh, the teeth were a little weird.
They loved that. They loved that.
I actually had to back that up at some point where I was like, does that puppet have teeth?
Yeah.
Does he have a separate puppet with a separate head that has like teeth that are bared? Yeah. I was like, oh my god.
Actually, all right. Yeah, actually there is. It's a separate puppet head.
my favorite character of season two has to be the talking Pippa.
Oh yes, the Pippa. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. So
okay.
So it ends on a cliffhanger, right? So there's mm-hmm. there's a bunch of these like monoliths that have like insect somethings on them. I don't know, and that is clearly where the next season is going. It is something to do with that.
It's the cadre of shadow government entities shot.
Yeah, right.
Where you have like you have an empty conference room, and it's all large LCD screens of shadowy figures around the room that are talking to. Well, now the good guy has defeated our plans. What do we do now?
Yeah, right. It's Nerve from Evangelion, basically. Like, right. It's kind of that. You know, Nerve versus Sele, that's kind of what it is. But I really did think that they pulled it off in the second season, mostly because it was extremely satisfying to watch Vox Cop just get fucked up. He gets fucked up and humiliated in like a really satisfying way. And that guy is a corrupt, fucking selfish fascist to the end of the earth. And like, he is that the character writing on that was like, I thought it was great.
Me too.
And yeah, it was really, really good. And it made me think like, oh, this is more than a Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Like, this is more than that. It was one of those things that really kind of it got my heart. It made me think like, oh, shit.
Well, here's the difference. Season one could have been like a one-off campaign. They're like, okay, we're going to gather a bunch of people, gather a bunch of players. Here's what you're doing. That group of people enjoyed playing together so much that the DM is like, all right, here's a bigger campaign. here's the next thing. So things are established. You have people that are like the stakes are obviously raised. You get a couple of new wonderful characters. And I know it wasn't, it was, it had to have been on purpose, but I don't know if this is a regular theme throughout anime of Shang and the, essentially he's the, what is it? Like the bladeless swordsman. He fights with a sword that's usually in its scabbard. The blade, if he pulls the sword out, the blade is dulled. And it was very Rurouni Kenshin.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily a trope. It's intended to contrast what he's actually attempting to do, which is the sorceress swords are absolutely terrible for everyone because they always fall into the hands of the wrong people. Right. So what I'm going to do is travel the world, or travel the continent or whatever it is, and seal them. Like, make it so that you can't have them. And if I need to fight, I'm going to do it with a fucking stick.
Right.
Like, that's basically what they're going for there.
Because I don't have to use a blade against you. Yeah, I can defeat you with a stick.
He'd rather just sleep in a hammock. Like, he would much rather just take a nap, which he deserves, I think. But so season two concludes. Mm-hmm. And so then there's this movie.
Bewitching Melody of the West.
Bewitching Melody of the West. So this is about Lang, who has a talking biwa, which we were talking about before. And this is like his backstory. And it turns out that his mom is basically an abusive piece of shit that was trying really hard to, like, the only reason you exist is because of your voice. You're so, and it's important to note this character is voiced by Takanori Nishikawa, who is an extremely famous Japanese pop star who sang a whole bunch of songs with for the show that you were just talking about, Rurouni Kenshin, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Extremely famous. Like, he will show up and people will really turn out for him. This movie, like, it's funny. Like, I love this show so much that I was watching the show and literally, like, clapping to myself in my living room. I was like, yeah, get him. Like, once. So you get the whole backstory of Lang and how he got the talking biwa, like, why he is the way he is. And Shang shows up, and he's, like, a little earlier in his career. And you get a little bit of the backstory about, like, exactly why, like, okay, well, here's why I'm collecting these swords. And here's how I'm doing this. Like, he's got, like, the magic, you know, the magic pen that, like, lets him put the swords into the scroll and all that stuff.
Right.
And you get all that backstory. But it's so much fun. It's so much fun.
It is.
just to see them do it. Like, it's so much fun. I don't know. How did you feel about that movie?
I was in. I was totally in for it. Especially when I realized that this was about Lang and his instrument. I don't know who voices that instrument, but I love him very much. His reading for everything I supremely enjoy. It was fascinating. I was in, like, the whole way. Yes, more of this. I think it's great.
Yeah, I just loved it. Like, I thought it just was,
like you said, I found myself cheer, like, I don't usually cheer out loud like when I'm watching stuff by myself, but the movie and the shows, absolutely, I found myself yelling stuff out loud. Oh my god, yes, go do that.
It's good. Yeah, no, it does make you feel that way. It's like you clap and cheer, and it's rare that something these days, like, really makes you feel like that, you know. It, like, where it plays out
a lot like a melodrama.
It play, you know, sure, but honestly, like, it takes a little bit more than that. to get your heart pumping.
Yeah.
And one of the things I really loved about the movie, the new movie, was that it kept doing Roll the Dice. Mm-hmm. They kept doing Roll the Dice. And like that song is on my workout playlist.
I loved that song.
That song is fucking incredible.
As soon as it started, like every time it starts, I'm like, oh shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You're like, here we go. Oh, it's about to pop off. Yeah. That's so good. Yeah, it makes you happy. It's just, it's good stuff. So I asked you to watch this, you know, without too much experience with anime, and I was like, I bet Ross would like this.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I'm delighted that you did.
And I loved the fact that they, at the end of, I think it's at the end of both movies, they have like, or it's maybe just the end of season two and the end of Bewitching Melody of the West. They have, during the credits, they have like behind the scenes production stuff. Like they're showing what they're doing with the puppets. And that was, I could watch that all day long.
Yeah. It always makes me laugh whenever you watch them just like toss one of them against the wall. You're like, all right, just throw it again.
Just toss it.
We gotta get the shot. Just throw the fucking puppet. Just get it done. But I'm really glad that you enjoyed it, and I'm glad that you put yourself through that.
I'm excited. I actually, I would like to, because I watch them all on Crunchyroll.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, this is something that I would like to own. I haven't actually bought anime or anything of the like in a very long time, but.
That is a big point of contention. There is no physical media release.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which
did not look which, that up.
Pisses me off.
it's currently you either watch it live or streaming, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow.
That's all you got.
Is that where we're headed?
I hope not.
Me too.
All right, we got some Twitter questions. Let's take some. We got some Twitter questions. Let's take some of these. From Austin, he asks, which anime, other than Evangelion, all right, would you want to see a puppet or Muppet adaptation of? Oh, boy.
Now, those are two very different, distinct.
Literally all of them? Listen, yeah. I fucking love puppets. You can't. If you're like, we're doing a thing and it's puppets, I'll be there.
Yeah, because each of them has its own unique character set, character style. There's one or two one-off characters where it's like, if they made a puppet out of that, how would you work that? How does that operate? I agree. They're like, we're going to do a puppet thing of this. Yeah, all right. Do that.
But if I had to choose, if I had to pick, I would probably say, like, Gundam, Mobile Suit Gundam. But the only thing is, it would instantly reframe everything as not serious.
It would be Mobile Suit Thunderbirds.
It would be Mobile Suit Sesame Street. Yeah. So I probably couldn't get away with that. Anyway, let's see here. Kristen Handy asks, would Thunderbolt Fantasy have worked if it was a different genre, like comedy or romance? Well, your premise is flawed here. You're suggesting that the show doesn't work. So I'm not quite sure how to answer that.
or that there are not.
Like it went two seasons and it's going for a third and there's more movies. So, what do you mean didn't work? What do you mean? Anyway, Branko Bergson asks, which characters from The Dark Crystal and Thunderbolt Fantasy would you want to be guests on The Muppet Show?
Well, do you want to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay. I need, from Thunderbolt Fantasy, I need Lang. And from the Dark Crystal, it's got to be Hup. The little podling paladin.
Oh, I see.
I was doing Age of Resistance. Were they talking just Dark Crystal? Well,
whatever. Does it matter?
No, but I really love Hup, so.
Personally, I would choose, I'd always put Lin in anything. And I would really enjoy watching Kermit the Frog try to navigate Lin's bullshit. Like, just try to get around it. Like, just desperately, like, just exhausted with his bullshit. And he's like, well, takes a toke from his pipe. Well, did you think about it this way? And he's like, look.
You're right. It's Shang and Kermit are the same character.
Pretty much.
Like, all right.
Yeah.
Which, arguably, Lin and Piggy would be similar, if not Lin and Fozzie. Fozzie's not usually trying to get around things.
No, he's very sincere. Lin is usually trying to bullshit you.
But Piggy is very, like, loophole-oriented. and Kermit's like, all right, look, you know what I meant.
That's an interesting phrase, loophole-oriented. Branka Bergson also asks, what would Kermit the Frog's reaction be if he found himself in the worlds of the Dark Crystal and Thunderbolt Fantasy?
And you mashed them together?
Yeah, well, the first one first, it would be like, the fuck? Just call a ride share and go home. I think that's the same answer for both. Just like see if there's a way he can call a ride share and go home.
I don't wanna.
Yeah, no.
I want to be a part of any of this.
Yeah. Negikitsu asks, would we have seen shows like Thunderbolt Fantasy be localized to the West more if Wulin Warriors had been a proper localization and not played it off as a joke? So, Thunderbolt Fantasy is part of a long and proud puppet tradition called Pili from Taiwan. And the only thing is I don't really consider Thunderbolt Fantasy to be some kind of a failure or something like that. I really don't. It obviously keeps getting renewed. They keep dumping money into it, so it's still good. I don't know. I don't really think people think it's a joke. I think it's good, and a lot of people recognize that it's good. So just because, like, your standard, like, isekai anime fan or whatever, like, maybe ignores it or makes fun of it or something like that, that doesn't mean it's not a success, and it doesn't mean it's not good. So it's all right.
going back to the Thunderbirds from the 70s,
we got a question about that, so we're getting to that.
Okay.
Why Carps asks, what current or classic musician would you love to see make a music video about Thunderbolt Fantasy?
Can we get the voice actor for Lang? And
I mean, well, that I mean, pretty much they already have done that, but I think the spirit of the question is American musicians.
Oh, okay.
So
you're like, just watch the second movie,
pretty much,
and that is music video.
It functions as a music video. Yeah, for sure. Totes. My instinct is to say, like, somebody like Def Leppard. Or like Poison.
make them break the state fair route.
Nope, the B-52s.
Oh my god, we're done. That's it.
The B-52s. Okay, now Russ, I got one for you that's really gonna hurt.
Yeah.
Craig 68 asks, who is the best Muppet?
Oh.
This is a tough one.
Seriously. I have to say Dr. Teeth.
Not a bad choice.
I'm never disappointed when he's on screen. He's always got great lines. And yeah, I think his deliveries are always, I'm always entertained by him. Some other Muppets, their stuff falls flat every now and then. They have a joke that doesn't land or something. But for me, like Dr. Teeth, he shows up on screen. I'm like, all right, this got interesting.
That's one of my favorite lines from the Muppet movie, where he comes out and like they're talking and they paint the bus. And then he's like, and Kermit's like, well, you guys can come with us and we can, you know, you can try to make it. And he's like, nah, just when you get rich and famous, we'll come out there and exploit your wealth.
Dr. Teeth, no, he knows exactly who he and his band are.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. My answer is actually lame. It's Kermit the Frog. Like, for sure. For sure. And that's not just because, like, he's the most famous, but, like, he's the most famous for a reason. And if you go back and watch a lot of those old Muppet shows, which most people have not, what you'll see is, like, a frustrated producer who's kind of a dick sometimes. But, like, and he really is kind of a dick a lot of the time. But, like, you know what it's like dealing with creatives. You have to rank, it's hurt, you're hurting cats. You're hurting cats, and you have to like be like, no, come on, no, get in the fucking, all right, come on, get in the fucking thing. I need this to go, like, and they're unashamed about like expressing it that way through his character on the Muppet Show, and so I suppose specifically the way he is portrayed on the Muppet Show is my favorite. That is the best, and in the Muppet movie. But you know, I've long had a thing where, like, anytime anyone brings up a Muppet thing, is it pre or post 1990?
Yeah,
because everything changed after Jim died. Everything changed, and it got honestly like there's a gigantic difference in tone, in delivery, in writing after he died.
Yeah,
you can tell. And like I will tell people, like, there's like two, depending on how you feel about the Muppets Take Manhattan. There's only really two good Muppet movies.
Yeah.
And he made two of them, and then he did Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. And then he passed away. Which was heartbreaking. And I was in like fifth grade when he died. Like fifth grade, I think. Yeah. So
yeah,
it really hit me hard as a kid. But to this day, I still retain a sense of like, this person was brilliant and they really knew what they were doing. And the sense of humor that he had disappeared. It totally disappeared. Like,
yeah, Kermit got more dour.
It all turned into, well, actually, I disagree with that. Like, he turned into, everything got so much more obnoxiously sincere. And the Muppets were funnier before that. Like, they weren't really taking anything seriously. We just recreated a song. We literally just recreated a song. They opened the second Muppet movie with, well, here's what you're about to see.
you're an audience, and I love the line. Essentially, in this, Fozzie and I play crack reporters.
Yeah, and it's gonna be great.
You guys are putting on a show for us.
Yeah, and also not insulting your intelligence. It's just like, hey, we're doing another one of these. Here you go. Like,
right.
Like, it's so perfect. It's such a good, and like, it's not, again, it's not insulting you. It's just, it's like, well, there, we got another one of these for you. Here you go. Just perfect. Like, I can't think of another, like, a better way to articulate a sort of casual attitude towards making stuff like that, even though it's taking you all of your time and energy. But the attitude in it is basically like, eh, there you go.
Here, have a thing.
Yeah, here you go. It'll be fun, though. Like, well, no, specifically, it's like, it's not like, eh, fuck you. It's a,
right.
We're going to have some fun, huh?
Yeah.
You know what you're about to see.
Like, I'm going to help you escape for 90 minutes.
Yeah. Totes.
I think that is the basis of Jim Henson.
Yeah. That I'm going to help you get away.
I'm going to help you escape for a little while. And then hopefully when you get back to the regular world, you can make the regular world a little better.
And I'm also not going to treat you like you're stupid.
Right.
I'm going to treat you like you already know what's going on here.
You know what's going on. Like, you and I, we're in this together.
Yeah. We're, see, now there you go. No, I'm serious. Like, we're in this together.
Yeah.
That was a big thing for him.
Yeah.
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 Jim. I miss him so much.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he would have really loved Thunderbolt.
Me too.
I really do.
Not just from a storytelling standpoint, but from a technical standpoint, like he would have marveled at this. and part of it I really enjoyed because they incorporated something, I don't know if it's even fair to compare, but something like Thunderbolt Fantasy, or that the Taiwanese glove puppet style in Age of Resistance, where there were two characters that were telling a story with little mini puppets. This was Puppetception, where it was two regular puppets and they were acting a thing out with smaller puppets on their puppet hands. And it was, I was engrossed on that one. So when you told me about Thunderbolt Fantasy, I was like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm all about new puppet stuff. Yes. Gimme. Let me watch it. Unless it's Happy Time Murders.
Havita Griseria asks, so how many people have you gotten to see Thunderbolt Fantasy so far? Well, I think I'm up to like 7 or 8. Just like in person, like, hey, you should watch this. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, it's really good. And they're like, oh shit, it is. It actually is really good. He says, on a more serious note, do you believe the show's writing would work as well if it wasn't a puppet show? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's that's very much a good standard for the writing of that show, where the writing of the show is not dependent on the medium. So if it weren't puppets, it would still be an interesting story.
Let's see here. Sadie with Tropical Fruit asks, can we discuss the queer coding in Thunderbolt Fantasy? Is it part of Urobuchi's own tendencies as a writer or drawing from Wuxia traditions? I would say in general, there isn't really that much queer coding in Thunderbolt Fantasy. It's there a little bit, but mostly I suppose I would hesitate to assign anyone like, oh, this character is definitely queer. I would really stop before I did that. Because it's like according to the text of the show, I'm not so sure it's there. They're friends, which is fine. And I totally understand why some people would read it that way. But and they give you plenty of material to help you ship your favorites. But I wouldn't necessarily call it queer coding. I do have take issue with that particular description. Anyway, I don't even know if you have an opinion on that.
This is the first time I'm hearing the term
queer coding.
Yeah. Which is
okay.
Surprises me because I'm
maybe I'll just delete this part. Okay. Trick the TM asks, so which of the Muppet characters do you think would work best in the Thunderbolt fantasy world? I can see Miss Piggy with all the elaborate clothing and her karate chops. Well,
Animal.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yep. That's the correct answer. The correct answer to that question is Animal. Thank you. Or rather, like, Shang and Lin on the bus while they're playing Can You Picture That?
Oh, my God.
It's like, oh, boy. And Shang is just like, Jesus. Lin is just smoking his pipe.
This is it's so much mashup fan art fodder here.
That is the only person who buys that is me. I am the only person who shows up and buys that. Like, wait, is that Shang and Lin on the fucking Happiness Hotel bus?
I have,
and they're like, yes, and I'm like, oh, here, how much money do I have to give you? Here you go.
I've done some ridiculously esoteric art where I drew it because I thought it was funny, and I'm sure there is one other person out there that I have done this for, and I have not met them yet. Like, I have quite a few pieces like that
where it's just like,
where I'm like, I'm done. I put hours into a piece, and I'm like, aside from giving me a chuckle, who did I do this for?
Yourself.
Right.
our friend and friend of the show, Paul Chapman, asks, how crazy is it that TM Revolution not only got his own puppet for the show, but also an entire spinoff movie with him as the main character? Look, it was a good movie, and I'm happy that happened. And also, it's hilarious that, like, they designed a character around him not having to do any voice acting. Because it's his little guitar talks. He doesn't talk.
Right. He's very... he talks very little. And so, you're right. He doesn't... He's not... And it works for the character.
Yeah.
Of course, all the people in the know are like, oh, this character's voice, but he doesn't really say a whole lot. Like, when stuff gets serious, he'll sing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
BoJack90 asks, Age of Resistance, what is your favorite bit of expanded lore or new character?
Well, I pretty much already answered. I love Hop, that little paladin podling.
Right.
He cracks me up.
Mostly I liked what the show was doing with the idea that a lot of the Gelfling tribes were basically, I don't want to say complicit, but it does do, I thought it did a really good job sort of articulating the relationship between the Skeksis and the Gelflings before what we already know is going to be a genocide. Mm-hmm. So here's how people behave before a genocide. And they're mostly looking out for themselves, and there's a bunch of different tribes, and they all get wiped out. Again, I don't know how to stress this. In the Dark Crystal movie, those are the last two living Gelflings, which people don't seem to remember, that those are the last two living Gelflings. Everyone else is dead. So they all die. Everyone you see dies. I'm not joking. These are prequels. So, like, that to me was the interesting thing about it, was like, oh, like, you can kind of see how these factions play off of each other, you know, before something like this happens. And I did think the writing, in the way that some of the Gelflings that were sort of like attached to the system actually spoke about it. The way that they talk about, like, oh, well, the Skeksis will help us. Well, no, they won't.
And they won't won't listen to anybody who tells them otherwise.
Yeah.
There was some stuff for Age of Resistance that I was like, too real. I need to watch some cartoons after this.
A little bit, yeah. Like it was a lot, and it felt like the show had been written for people who had not actually seen the film. It felt a little bit like that. Like, oh, you don't really know what's gonna happen here, but I do, and it's
shouted from the rooftops. Like, everybody dies.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, all these people die, right? Yeah. Okay. Jen and Kira aren't even born yet. Anyway. Okay, last question from our friend, Bunny Cartoon. Now, Ross, I know you're not an anime guy, but okay. Do you know what a husbando is?
No.
Okay. A husbando is basically who you imagine yourself dating.
Okay.
If they were a real character, if they were a real person.
Okay.
So the question is, which of these good sword puppet boys? Now, I don't even know if you know what that means. Which of these boys is your puppet husband, though? Now I'm asking you. Now you are straight as a fucking whatever.
Right,
something that's really straight.
But I'm also secure, and I'm not afraid to speculate.
All right, okay, all right then. So, which one would you date?
Okay, I have to think. Would I think seriously, or would I think for entertainment value? It would be Lynn.
Okay.
but probably seriously, it would be. Ooh.
I love how much consideration you're putting into this.
Is it Han? The Frozen Wonder dude with the spear?
I think so.
I like him. So that would be my answer. Like the serious answer would be Han.
My immediate answer is Shang. Immediately Shang. Shang, hit me up. If you were not a puppet, hit me up on Grindr. I will come over to your house. It's totally fine.
I can only imagine how many times you might make him facepalm. Where you say or do something and he's just like, ugh. Yeah.
Well, listen, buddy, it was really great to have you on the show. Thanks for watching that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I really am. I did. It means a lot to me that you enjoyed the show. So
thanks for introducing me. And this actually might be my re-entry into like finally seeking out some other anime and getting back into let's spin that plate as well as everything else.
Well, let me tell you, there's a show. It's called Keep Your Hands Off Azuken, and you got to watch that one.
I actually contemplated it because you did mention that. So that is top of my list for the next thing that I want to try.
Yeah, you gotta see that. It is that show is basically about the difficulties of managing capitalism versus art.
I'm not watching it right now.
Yeah. Well, I hope you do, because I think you would really enjoy it. It's also made by one of the best artists that we have in this industry, Masaki Iwasa, who made Devilman Crybaby and a bunch of other stuff. So it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful expression of the artistic spirit. And I think you would really enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, I will look into that.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure.
Is there any way to stop it? Starring
everybody. Everybody. Everybody has
me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Ross for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us anywhere you find your podcasts. Leave us a rating, a review. You know, it helps the show. Anyway, who cares? I'll see you all next week.